This is The Health Show, a presentation of National Productions.
If there was a disease that caused bone damage, bladder incontinence, and loss of sexual desire in just about everybody, you'd imagine there'd be a worldwide search for a cure. The thing is, this is already happening, and it's not a disease. It's what a huge number of women experience before, during, and after menopause.
They were patted on the head and said, well, honey, that's just what happens when you get older.
On today's Health Show, an endocrinologist gives us her take on what to do when you outlive your ovaries. Then we'll take a lighthearted look at a British comedian who's looking to break the world record for the oldest living man, about 80 years from now. Dr. Nina Sachs is away this week. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Health Show. There are pretty much only two risk factors for developing menopause, being a woman and staying alive. Most of us have heard of the most common symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings, vaginal dryness. We've also heard that hormone replacement therapy can relieve those symptoms. However, the National Institutes of Health suggests that you should have a serious talk with your doctor about the benefits and risks of hormone therapy, a doctor who is aware of your entire medical history. The NIH also suggests learning about options that do not involve taking hormones, as there are studies that have questioned the health benefits and risks of hormone therapy, including the risk of developing breast cancer, heart attacks, strokes, and blood clots. One doctor who is convinced that the benefits outweigh the risks is Dr. Marina Johnson, a board-certified endocrinologist whose new book is called Outliving Your Ovaries. An endocrinologist reviews the risks and rewards of treating menopause with hormone replacement therapy. Dr. Johnson, as an endocrinologist, people probably assume you see people with diabetes every day, but you took your practice in a different direction. Why is that?
I did that because when I first went into practice, Bob, I was having women come in with serious symptoms, you know, insomnia, depression, anxiety, and no one seemed to be taking them seriously. Patients would tell me they were patted on the head and said, well, honey, that's just what happens when you get older. And they were sent away without any help. Or maybe they would be given tranquilizers or sleeping pills or antidepressants. And to me, that just wasn't right. And so I started treating women because menopause is an estrogen deficiency disease. I mean, it's not a disease, actually, because all women go through it, but it's a condition that's caused by low estrogen. So that's the reason I started doing it 30 years ago. And in that time, I've managed over 100,000 female patient visits. And so in working with women all these years, I've learned that you can get amazing transformation in a woman's body when they're made whole again, because essentially all we're doing is putting back what's been missing, what is missing at the time of menopause. The reason I wrote the book is because there's a lot of confusion in this field about hormones, and I felt that, you know, before I went to medical school, I was a writer. I was an assistant editor for a drug reference book. And so I was very familiar with researching the literature. So basically, I reviewed over 500 medical journal articles, distilled them down to layman's terms, terms that, you know, women can easily understand, and wrote the book to be a guidebook to help women in deciding what to do about hormones, because a lot of the books that are written out there are written by people that aren't hormone specialists. And so I feel that, you know, being an endocrinologist and a pharmacist enables me to kind of give a little bit more definition and guidance for women.
How difficult is it to write a book for all women when, well, every woman, of course, is different and they're going to have different needs?
Well, you're absolutely right, but all women have estrogen. It's just that whenever you're writing the book, there are different factors that women have to take into consideration. What I've done in the book is to essentially outline all the different stages of a woman's life, because in many instances, women are not very knowledgeable about their bodies, and so by informing them about what a normal process is, then they're better able to recognize it. Because since everyone goes through menopause, there are different stages that enable them to recognize the clues, because the earlier that they're able to notice the early symptoms of menopause or perimenopause, that's the stage that precedes menopause, then the better able they are to go to their doctor to take care of it sooner rather than later. For example, in perimenopause, a lot of women start having very heavy periods. If they don't know that they need to go to their doctor when their periods start getting heavy, then a lot of times they kind of just suffer through with their periods. And then by the time they get to their gynecologist, they're anemic, they're bleeding 3 weeks out of each month, and they wind up having a hysterectomy that could have been avoided.
Is there ever a time where if a woman hasn't started and has gone through menopause that it's too late for her to start?
You know, that's a very good question, and because you're absolutely right, what the data is showing now is that the most protection from estrogen is when it started within the first 10 years, because estrogen is most effective at preventing heart disease, osteoporosis, Alzheimer's, when it started within 10 years of menopause. And it's true that if it started after that, there's going to be less benefit. There is some benefit in building bone, but when it comes to heart and brain, there's not as much protection. However, you know, those are the averages, and we treat individuals every day, not averages. I'll give you a story of a patient of mine that I saw a few years ago. She was 82 years old, and she was brought to me by her daughter. The lady's name was Cora. She had never taken hormones after menopause. And her daughter said, "Mom's always been so vibrant, energetic, and happy, and she loves to do gardening. However, for the past 6 months, she just sits in a rocking chair and stares at the wall. I've taken her to several doctors, and they've all told me everything's normal. But this isn't normal for my mother. Is there anything you can do to help her?" So I examined her mother, and the only abnormal lab test was her lack of estrogen. So I told her daughter, "You know, I'm not sure how much benefit we can expect to see, but let's try her on estrogen and see how she responds." Well, I started Cora on topical estrogen, and after 3 months of normal estrogen levels, her daughter came back excited, and she said, "I have my mother back. She's smiling, and she's happy, and she's back to her old self." So Cora taught me to never give up on a patient just because they're older. Everyone deserves a chance to be better. And so people, we need to treat our patients as individuals, not as statistics on a bell-shaped curve. So I try to challenge my patients to be the outliers who defy the odds and do better than expected.
About a decade ago, the results of the Women's Health Initiative started coming out, and that put a big scare into people about hormones. Has the information, and over the years, that information has been coming out in dribs and drabs also as we learn more about it. How much education do you have to do to your patients, and how much of that information has made you change your practice?
When the Women's Health Initiative came out, it caused great upheaval in women's health because it reported that Prempro increased breast cancer, and both Prempro and Premarin increased heart attacks, strokes, and blood clots. So overnight, women everywhere were taken off all forms of hormone replacement. Well, I didn't do that at the time because I didn't use Premarin and Prempro. I used transdermal, which is topical estrogen, and I've always used it ever since I went into practice. But let me tell you why you can't apply the WHI findings to all HRT and to all women who take HRT. First of all, most women who start hormone replacement are newly menopausal that are taking hormone replacement for symptom relief. They have a very low incidence of heart disease at the start of menopause. It's been shown that the WHI design was flawed because with subsequent analysis, it showed that the majority of women in WHI, some of them had been menopausal for up to 20 years. So they had never taken hormone replacement. So they already had significant heart disease. Also, 50% of the WHI women were either current or past smokers, and 34% were obese, known risk factors of heart disease and cancer. When you broke down the heart disease to younger women who started HRT within 10 years of menopause, there was no increased risk of heart disease. And the increase in breast cancer was found to be from giving a synthetic progestin daily. The important finding, though, that we learned from WHI was that both Premarin and Provera in all age groups increased blood clots and strokes, because blood clots and other harmful products are made by the liver when you give oral estrogen. This effect doesn't occur when you give estrogen topically in the form of patches, creams, or gels. So the take-home from WHI is that when you're choosing HRT, never take estrogen pills, because it's much safer to use topical estrogen. And for the progestin, go for natural progestin instead of the synthetic progestin.
What is the difference there? What is considered natural and what is considered artificial?
Okay, that's a good question. Natural is considered the hormone that is actually present in a woman's body, estradiol and progesterone. The synthetics are, you know, like the most commonly used synthetic is Premarin, which comes from horse estrogen. So doesn't it make more sense to give back the body the hormone that's missing, estradiol? So that's why it works better, because hormones are very complex molecules, and the body much prefers to be given the real thing rather than some copycat hormone. One thing I would like to say, though, about giving topical, the medical term is transdermal, but in my book I call it topical just because it's a term that is more familiar to women. I would like to make the point, though, that it's much better for women to take topical estrogens as pharmaceutical topical estrogens, because that's another big point of confusion. Women think that the only way to get natural hormones, and another term for that is bioidentical hormones, is from compounded products that are custom-made in a compounding pharmacy. But a woman can get natural hormones in any drugstore. And so those hormones are manufactured under more strict quality control standards. So it's important for women to know about that distinction.
There are a lot of herbs that are being marketed as to help women with their symptoms of menopause, black cohosh, and different types of commercially available herbs. Do they have any benefit at all?
Some of those herbs can be beneficial in relieving symptoms, but they don't make up for the fact that that vital hormone is deficient. So I would also like to point out one important thing before we leave about the number one fear that women have is breast cancer. That's the reason why 80% of women deny themselves hormones, because of fear of breast cancer. And women need to know that there is a slight risk, but the risk is very small. If you take 10,000 women who never take hormones, follow them for 5 years, there's going to be 30 women out of 10,000 that are going to get breast cancer. And that's considered the natural occurrence of breast cancer. But the more important question is, how many more women get breast cancer if they do decide to take hormones? Well, the number increases to 38. 8 more cases of breast cancer occur out of 10,000 as a result of taking hormones. Well, what about the other 9,962 women who took the hormones, didn't get breast cancer, and we're protected against heart disease, Alzheimer's, osteoporosis, and enjoyed a better quality of life?
I have heard that breast cancer patients who are recovering, though, should avoid hormones. Is that a fact?
In general, that's true. In the course of their treatment, oncologists always withdraw any estrogen. However, after the breast cancer has been treated and cured, then some oncologists say a time of 5 years or longer has passed, the woman is disease-free. In some instances, if the woman's quality of life is very poor as a result of low estrogen, they will allow them to take small doses of estrogen, provided they're being closely monitored. But that's an individual decision that has to be made by the oncologist and the woman.
Dr. Marina Johnson is a board-certified endocrinologist whose new book is called Outliving Your Ovaries, An Endocrinologist Reviews the Risks and Rewards of Treating Menopause with Hormone Replacement Therapy. Still to come, a British comic is on his way to a world record in about 80 years or so. That's next on The Health Show. You can find The Health Show anytime online at healthshow.org. Search the archive and listen to whole programs you may have missed or would like to hear again. Even subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow. You can start your own Health Show archive with a tape or CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for Health Show number 1256. This is The Health Show. I'm Bob Barrett. We all want to live a nice long life, but a British comedian is looking to make his run a world record. Radio Netherlands Marty Chesterton recently had a chat with this would-be Methuselah.
Most of us hope to live to a ripe old age, but there are some people out there who take this challenge more seriously than others. British comedian Alex Horn wants to win the world record for being the oldest man alive. So far, so good. Alex has made it to 32 years, but he has at least another 80 to go if he wants to be a serious contender for the title. And although this is kind of a stunt and it's always good for a laugh, Alex says that it's no joke. In fact, he's found a new respect for the elderly since setting out on his journey to stay alive indefinitely. He joins me now from a studio in London. So, Alex, how far have you got with the challenge?
Well, I'm maybe a quarter of the way there. I mean, it all depends on what age the oldest man in the world is in about 100 years' time, because worryingly, it might be about 200. But with a bit of luck, we'll all die when we're about 100, and I'll, only 70 years to go, so we'll see.
Now, most of us have thought about winning a world record at some point in our lives, but what made you pick oldest man in the world?
Yeah, definitely. Like you, I've always wanted to get in the Guinness Book of Records, and there aren't that many options. When you turn 30, I think, I've resigned myself to not being the fastest man in the world. I always wanted to be the tallest man, and that sort of ground to a disappointing halt. I got over 6 foot, and then it just slowed down. So oldest man seemed to me kind of the easiest one, because you just sort of wait. That's the main skill, is waiting, and I'm pretty good at waiting.
So is this a little bit about never having your ambitions crushed? I mean, I'm coming to terms with the fact now that in my 30s and still rubbish at sport, I will never win Wimbledon. And your challenge makes you a winner for your entire life. And if you fail, you'll be kind of too dead to care.
It's a very good point that by setting myself this challenge, I can't really lose. I'll only have lost when I'm dead. And when I'm dead, I won't know that I've lost. So it's win-win.
And do you reckon you're in with a good chance?
Absolutely. I'm very confident. I'm sure I'll get into the top 10. It's just those, I think the final push is going to be tough, but I'm pretty sure I'll get over 100. I've got quite a few centurions in my family. I'm very healthy. I don't smoke. I don't shave very often. I don't drive recklessly very often. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll get close.
Do you want to be immortal, or is oldest man title enough for you?
The plan, because some people have sort of four-year plans. Mine's, 140-year plan. The plan is I'll get oldest man first, then I'll move on to oldest human, because women, unfortunately, well, not necessarily unfortunately, but they live longer than men, but I'm going to try to tackle that next. And then I'll have a crack at immortality. I mean, there aren't many people around who can say what it's like, and obviously there will be some negatives, but, with technology being as it is, I'm sure most of my body can be replaced. Although I should say, I should apologise, you might be able to tell, I've actually got quite a bad cold and cough, and my voice is almost gone, which isn't I'm hoping this isn't the beginning of the end.
Oh no.
So immortality right currently looks quite a long way off.
Have you been training for this? Have you been popping extra vitamin pills or running 10 miles a day or something?
Well, I went to Andorra for a weekend. Andorra's got the highest life expectancy in Europe, so I thought I'd do some high altitude training there. So I sort of sat around and did what they did, which is ski and drink coffee. So I did that. I went to Hong Kong. Hong Kong has got very high life expectancy, so I took some tablets over there. They were called sea dog pills, and the chemist assured me they would improve my longevity. It turns out when I got home, it's mainly for erectile dysfunction. So, I mean, again, it's can't do any harm. But apart from that, I mainly stopped training. I've stopped playing rugby because
it's dangerous.
Die. Yeah, exactly. So I'm sort of starting to become bedridden.
A lot of bedridden people live to a ripe old age, though.
That's the theory. That's the theory. My grandfather, unfortunately, passed away a couple of weeks ago at 92, so not a bad effort. They'd only given him another couple of weeks to live, but he, by staying in bed and eating a fried breakfast every morning, he outlasted the expectation. So that's the plan.
Now, to achieve this record, you're going to have to stay alive for another 88 years, is it?
At least, I think, yeah. I mean, okay. The oldest man ever was 122. The oldest man living is 114.
Have you considered cheating? Maybe picking people off?
I mean, I'm ashamed, but yes, I have. It's crossed my mind on several occasions. And there's a few ways of doing it. I can just doctor my birth certificate and make it 1878 instead of 1978. That's a head start. But unfortunately, I think that they don't base it solely on the birth certificate. They'll probably want to look at me. I don't think I can pass for a 132-year-old yet. So the other option is to somehow wipe out everyone older than me.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not even cheating, but it's quite extreme action. I do, so I'm very generous with things that do harm now. I hand out fatty food and knives.
Okay. Now, have you thought about how you'll celebrate when you win your title?
Well, I've become friends with a super centenarian, and it's a great word. That's a word for somebody who's over 110 years old, and there are only actually about 100 of them in the world. And I know a lady called Ellen Watson, who's the fifth oldest person in this country, and she really does celebrate every year in style. First of all, you get a letter from the Queen, of course. You get a telegram. You get one when you're 100, one when you're 105, and then one every year after that. So she sort of celebrates by opening a letter, having a cake, and then putting on some music and dancing. So that's the template that I'm going to follow.
I'm just wondering how your challenge has changed how you view the ageing process.
I went and talked to all my three surviving grandparents. That was quite eye-opening for me, was just actually asking them what they thought about death and old age. Because I think, I mean, maybe it's my generation, I don't think we necessarily treat our old people that well. I mean, some of the countries like Japan, who've got very high life expectancy, they reckon a lot of that is down to the older generations living with the younger generations, and families stick together. Whereas now, here, we tend to, without being crude, sort of farm them out and put them into old people's homes. And I think that is a shame, and I've had to face that.
Yeah.
That was quite grim.
Well, back to you and your challenge. Is there anything people can do to help you with the record attempt?
Well, yeah, there are several ways people can help me. The first is the thing I'm most keen on is just for people to warn me of imminent danger. The last thing I want is for the attempt to end in some sort of ridiculous failure like a
piano falling.
Yeah, exactly, a piano. That would be awful to go in that way. So so if you see a piano sort of hovering over me, it's just a simple cry of watch out for the piano. And helping me across the road like an elderly person. It's that sort of thing, just general assistance. Maybe giving me some fruit. Nothing more than fruit, but fruit or money. Okay. That sort of thing would help.
Alex Horn, good luck with the quest.
Thank you very much.
That report from Radio Netherlands, Marnie Chesterton. That's all the time we have for this week's Health Show. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at healthshow.org. You can explore the archive for any programs you might have missed or would like to hear again. You can also subscribe to our podcast. That's healthshow.org. Want more? Then follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thehealthshow. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is letters@healthshow.org. Dr. Nina Sachs will be back with us next week. I'm Bob Barrett. Till next time, stay healthy and be sure to join us for another edition of The Health Show.
Dr. Nina Sachs is a practicing member of the American College of Gastroenterology. Bob Barrett is producer of The Health Show. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Health Show is a presentation of National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content.